Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody, to Parshas Miketz and to Shabbos of Hanukkah, Erev Shabbos of Hanukkah. It's an exciting time, and we have an exciting class today. I'm going to open up my Chumash to the Parsha of Miketz, but that's only to make it official. I'm really not going to talk much about Parshas Miketz. Depending how it goes, we may mention it at the end. Not that it's not significant to our message, but we really have to focus in on what the message is. We have been learning this whole year Yesodos, basics, and basics of Torah reality. And we have, I think over the past number of weeks, we have kind of established the centrality of Adam, of man, in the stage of the world, even more so than Hashem in a certain way. Hashem is like shining the spotlight on man and saying, man, it's up to you. We certainly have inclined in that direction. And as with our focus on Adam, on man, we have a number of times we've made the point that man is kind of comprised of four different elements. Last week we spoke about it a lot. His physical self, his goof, his body, his nefesh, which I'd like to, I've been translating that as his emotional structure. Let's add the word his ego, his sense of self, which is not exactly physical, it's not exactly spiritual, it's kind of, it's the ego, it's the sense of self. It has emotions, it has a wide range of emotions, but this is called the nefesh by our sages. And then man has a higher element called his seichel, his intelligence. And that can reach higher than his ego. It can transcend the ego. But that's not the highest. The highest is the neshama. The highest is the spiritual soul, the godly soul, the part of godliness within each one of us. And it is really on the level of neshama that we have a connection with Hashem. It is really on the level of the neshama that we have connectedness with each other. And this was the subject of our class last week. And we pointed out that it is most difficult for us to find ourselves in that level. It is most difficult for us to really recognize our existence on the neshama level. It's really not something that we're conscious of. We are very conscious and aware of our bodies. We are very conscious and aware of our egos, although we're not always conscious and aware about how conscious and aware we are of our egos. We don't realize it sometimes. And we are, for the most part, aware of our mind and our intelligence, but we are almost not aware at all of our neshama. And that's why it is so challenging for a Jew to try to live up to his spiritual calling, to try to have a relationship with Hashem, to feel that connectiveness with other Jews, because we really are connected, but only on that neshama level. It's so challenging. But anyway, this is where we're at. And what we'd like to do today, in light of our holiday of Hanukkah, is to learn a very, very important spiritual historical lesson. Spiritual historical. What I mean by that is that we are going to learn today that the state that we are in, that we find ourselves in, was not always this way. It wasn't always like that. it wasn't always that it was so hard for us to be aware of our spiritual selves, for us to be aware of our spiritual connectedness, and for us to be aware of the presence of Hashem. It wasn't always like that. Think about what we have in front of us. Here we have a Chumash. Five books of Moshe. We're always reading it, every single week. And we are reading a book which is literally like, if you'll pardon the colloquialism, it's like Alice in Wonderland. It is totally, totally make-believe as far as our day-to-day existence. You have people talking with God. You have miracles. You have prophecies. We don't have any of that today. Think about the Chumash. In the Chumash, it covers what span of time? From creation until the end of the 40 years in the desert. And that was, I'll tell you exactly, the year 2488. So the Chumash spans 2488 years. What happens after the Chumash closes? We have the books of the prophets. And that starts immediately upon the death of Moshe, and it goes through the period of Joshua and the conquest of the land of Israel, and then the appointment of the kings, and we had prophets. We had Shmuel, Samuel, we had Eliyahu, the prophet Elijah, we had Isaiah, Yeshaya, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and The prophets ends with what event? What cataclysmic event? The destruction of the temple. The temple was built during the period of the prophets and the kings. And the temple is destroyed. And that's the end of the prophets. Actually, the prophets survive the destruction and they continue a little bit longer. The Jews go into exile into Babylon, and after 70 years of exile, they come back. But then, that's the end of the prophets. That's the end of the prophets. We have some books in the Kesuvim, in the writings, and they have books from earlier years. They have from King David, from King Shlomo, but they also have the latest, Daniel, who lived in Babylon, Esther. Esther was like chronologically the last book. That takes place during the Babylonian exile. We come back to the land of Israel. We rebuild the second temple. But it ain't the same no more. It ain't the same no more. There are no prophets. There are no miracles. And what we used to know as the Hashra'as Hashchina, as the divine presence living amongst the Jewish people, is much, much lessened. It's much, much lessened. The people, you know, that lived, there were some people that actually lived in both, to see both temples. And it was very depressing for them when they saw the second temple being rebuilt, because they knew the difference. So what happened? Why was the second temple so spiritually so much diminished from the first? So I'd like to teach you nothing new that you haven't learned before, but I'd like to review with you what pieces of furniture were in the temple. They were in the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which was the very first temple in the Chumash. They were in the first temple, and some of them were in the second temple. Let's review. You walk into the temple, the main building. You see three pieces of furniture in front of your eyes. you see an altar, a small altar. Okay, what was that altar used for? Incense. Incense, it makes a beautiful aroma. No animals. That's on the outside. That's in the courtyard. You walk a little further, and on your right, you see a shulchan. You see a table with tiers. Six levels and 12 loaves of bread. On the left, you see a menorah with seven beautiful branches, seven lights. And then you see a curtain in front of you and a big sign, do not enter, unless you're the high priest and it's Yom Kippur. That is called the Holy of Holies. When you walk through there, you see the ark. And on top of the ark are kruvim, are cherubs, figurines. When Moshe was in his office, he would go into the temple, into that room, not into the Holy of Holies, but he would go into the temple room and he would hear the voice of God emanating from where? From between the figurines in the Holy of Holies. He would hear the sound and he would get a message from God.
So he was hearing the voice coming out of the...
He heard the voice coming out, yes. Is that right?
Well, how did... Oh, I don't. You're the reverend. how come if the ark of the Holy of Holies, how do they get to the Torah and commandments and things?
Well, they didn't read from that every day. They didn't have a regular prayer service like we did. There is a commentary on the Chumash from the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who says that after Moshe would hear a prophetic message, he would walk over to the menorah and he would stare at it. He would look at the lights of the menorah. And the menorah helped him to process what he had heard from God and to be able to understand all of the Torah Shebi'al Peh, all of the oral teachings, that which was not written or that which was not explicitly stated by God, he would be able to understand that in his mind by looking at the menorah.
That's a seven-candle
menorah. That was the process. A message from God. It was clear as could be. There was no doubt as to what God had said. But then there was additional processing that went on to develop and to fully flesh out all of the details of the laws by looking at the menorah and processing it through the seichel. These four kelim, these four furnishings, are the sources of the four levels of man that we have been studying about. The source, you know, God made a world and he creates the world and he infuses the world constantly with the energy that is needed for our existence. God provided the physical energy through somehow through that shulchan, through that table and that bread. That was the channel. That was the valve through which physicality flowed into the world and gave us our physical existence. I think, I didn't see this explicitly, what I'm telling you has been explained very well in the Or Gedaliahu by Rabbi Gedaliah Shor. I believe that we could make a case that that which is between physical and intellectual, we're calling the nefesh, or the ego, or the emotional structure, that came through the ketores. If you think about what ketores is, it's something that has an aroma. A smell is something which is in between physical and spiritual, right? It's a smell. It's not something you can taste and touch, but you can definitely sense it with your body. We smell the besamim on Motzei Shabbos, that revives our nefesh, because we feel sad that Shabbos is leaving. The menorah is the channel through which the energy of the mind, of the seichel, flowed. Moshe would look at the menorah and he would be infused with seichel. And the Aron was the source of God's own direct communication with the world through prophecy. The second temple, did I tell you this already? The second temple did not have an ark. The second temple did not have an ark. They made a movie about it, the Raiders of the Lost Ark. The ark was taken away before the Babylonians destroyed the temple, and we never got it back. And in the second temple, we did not have an ark. We had the foundation stone. There was just a little plaque there.
Where's the ark?
The ark is lost. The ark is hidden, never not to be discovered until the third temple. The Torah was lost. The Tanakh. That's the time that there's no more Tanakh. The Tanakh period is closed. There is no more Tanakh. There is no more prophecy. There is no more Shekhinah. God is no longer openly communicating with man.
Behind the Kodesh Kodashim, there was the curtain. It was just the curtain, because Tita stabbed the curtain.
The curtain was still there, and the chamber was still there, but all there was a stone. There was no more ark, there was no more tablets or the Torah. That means that from the time of the Second Temple and on, we did not communicate with God directly. We didn't.
So, we never had a second
temple. How will we communicate with God? How will we find out what God is saying to us? How will we connect? On what level will we connect? Well, that's why things have changed. That's why we no longer are living with awareness of the fourth dimension. That's why we don't see miracles. That's why we are not aware of our neshama. That's why we have this very fuzziness when it comes to, are we really connected or are we just separate people? That's why there's an increase of physicality. There's an increase of ego. What is going to be the frontier with which we connect with God? Okay, let me pause for a moment and read to you from this book that I read last week by Jeremy Kagan, who is really writing about this whole topic. We have seen how in the era of prophecy, we were aware of ourselves as vehicles for the expression of the Creator in the world. We saw ourselves as godly. We knew that our existence was to funnel in the existence of God into the world through ourselves, because we were aware of our neshamos. But when prophecy disappeared, not only did Hashem's presence go away in an open sense, but we lost our own identity. We became isolated in our individual bounded egos. We just became people. That's it. Nothing higher, nothing transcendent. As this transition was occurring, so what happened in the world? How is the world different than it was before? This is not just something that affected Jewish people. This was a real change in the climate, in the spiritual climate of the world. As this transition was occurring, Greece began its ascent to world domination. The new awareness of the ego became the foundation of Greek culture and worldview. With the Creator hidden behind the veil of physical existence, Greece was free to build the world around man and his finite intellect. So what happened when this change occurred, when God hid his face? As we've used that expression before, it's from the Torah. God says, I will eventually hide my face. What happened when God hid his face? Mankind jumped on the bandwagon and says, okay, God's gone. Now it's up to us. Now it's about man. Now it's about man. You know what? Paganism stopped also. Because paganism was only a response to the godly presence. If God's presence is in the world and I don't want to listen to him, then I have to find another God. But I can't just do nothing. But after the shift, we could just do nothing. We could just forget about worship. We could just focus on man. And that's exactly what the Greek Empire and the Greek culture sought to do. Build a whole new world around, centered around man. That's terrible for Jews. It's terrible for the world. What about God? He's hidden, but he's still there. How did we maintain our connection with God? The oral Torah is still left for us. That human aspect of Torah through the intellect of man that Moshe Rabbeinu used to get by standing in front of the menorah, that was still available to us. The oral Torah enabled us to retain a link to transcendent reality despite our newfound isolation. Through the oral Torah, we learn to uncover the image of God within us and through it to reach toward the Creator. We now had to go through God rather than direct connection. We had to go through God through our minds grasping his Torah through the process of learning. This remaining connection beyond finite reality presented a direct challenge to the authority of the Greek vision. So here we have a conflict. Everyone is confronted by the new reality that God's presence is no longer manifest. How are we going to deal with it? The Greeks dealt with it their way, and the Jews, hopefully, would deal with it our way. Greeks would say, everything revolves around man. There is no transcendence. There is no spiritual reality anymore. And the Jews would say, ah, we still have our connection to God through his Torah. And let's study his Torah. Did the Greeks like that?
No.
Originally, they did. Originally, when the Greeks first encountered the Torah, they wanted to include it under the umbrella of their universal knowledge. Because after all, they're all about man's intellect, and Jewish people were very intellectual. We were always studying. Great. But it soon became clear that the Torah, as the Jews related to it, was principally a system of covenant, not knowledge. Our purpose of Torah study was to connect with God. Their purpose of study was to make man the pinnacle. Ours was about a relationship. Theirs was about man. It could not be truly in fact, the Torah could not be truly understood because it was a transcendent vision. We gained insight only through subordinating ourselves to the Torah and becoming a part of it. The only way we could truly become connected to God was almost to become more humble, to say, to pray, Hashem, can you please help me understand this? You know, we're trying to understand things that are godly. Then there started to be a big chasm between the Jews and the Greeks. And unfortunately, the story of Hanukkah is that a lot of the Jews became more enamored by the Greek knowledge than by the Torah knowledge. And guess what? That's where we still are. We are still here. We're still at that point. We don't have that spiritual connection. We only have our minds. Our minds is crucial, but there's two options out there. There's Greek knowledge, and there's Torah knowledge. And they're both calling for us. And the Greek knowledge is a lot louder in the general world out there. The story of Hanukkah, the miracle of the oil, of the menorah, it's all about this. Basically, what the Greeks wanted to do was take human knowledge and make it impure. Cut it away from godliness. They went into the temple, they found all the oil, which they knew was the source of our spiritual enlightenment, and they defiled it. And the Jews could have just said, that's it. It's all over. But a few Jews said, no, it's not all over. We've got to find that pure oil. We've got to maintain our hold on Torah knowledge. And they were searching and searching till they found that one flask of oil, that 1 ounce of strength within them that said, we will not settle for Greek knowledge. We will not settle for impure oil. We want only pure oil. And God said, because you recognize the difference, I am going to make a miracle, and I am going to make sure that you will always have a connection to me through Torah knowledge and Torah learning. And that's what happened at Hanukkah. And it didn't end the struggle. The struggle continued. The struggle still continues. But the victory was a permanent one in that there would always be a connection to God through Torah. And here we are 2,000 years later. By the way, I hope everyone understands that the story of Hanukkah took place during the Second Temple. That's obvious, right? When there's no Aron, when the menorah is it, when our connection to God is through learning. So the victory was permanent in the sense that throughout the dark centuries and millennia of exile, we would still have our connection to Torah. Hashem would ensure that. Some take-home messages from this. I mean, it's enlightening. It gives us that, remember we talked about this, the godly view on history. It's not just stories, but it has to do with the fabric of what the world is all about. What we have to take out of here, and this is important, we talk about Jewish continuity. What does Jewish continuity mean? The message is that we are going to have to use our seichel. We're going to have to use our minds if we want to maintain that connection to God. Using our minds means not just living on the goof level, not just goofing off, just living on the body level, not just living on the ego level. You know, if you want to be Jewish, what does it mean to be Jewish? It means you eat latkes on Hanukkah and matzah on Pesach and cheesecake on Shavuos. That's trying to connect to God through our goof. And that's it. We want to connect to God on the nefesh level, on the ego level. I'm a Jew because my parents were Jews, my grandparents were Jews, and they gave their life, and I'm proud to be a Jew, and I'll never stop being a Jew. That's good. But that is relating to God purely on the ego level. In order to maintain our connection with God, we need the menorah. We need to use our seichel. And we have to fight the battle between how to use our seichel. Are we going to use our seichel the Greek way, where man understands all, and it's humanistic knowledge that is going to be supreme? Or are we going to use our seichel to submit ourselves? What does God say? And I can access it if I humbly approach the Torah and I study it. And when I study the Torah, I'm going to use my intellectual capacity to make sure I understand it. And I'm going to question, and I'm going to try to make sure I don't just fudge it. And we can't afford just to be dogmatic about things and just to say, well, that's what it says. We can't do that because we're not using our seichel. We have to understand. And it's not just about understanding Torah, it's also understanding everything about us. We have to understand who we are. We have to learn hashkafa, we have to learn Jewish outlook. We have to understand why we exist. We have to understand what is the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. We have to understand that this world is comprised of goof and of ego. And the difference between those and seichel, and the difference between that and transcendence and spirituality. We have to understand the difference between what our seichel says and what our dimyon, our imagination says. So many people just think dimyon, just imagination. It's not real. It's not based on seichel. What's the difference between Greek knowledge and Torah knowledge? We have to understand ourselves and our unique. Each person has a uniqueness, a unique purpose, a unique set of circumstances. We have to understand that. We have to use our seichel to understand who we are. We have to think and contemplate what we're doing, not just go with the flow. Even if we're following a good group, we can't just be group followers. We have to actually apply ourselves in hisbonenus, in contemplation as to what our unique job is. And finally, how are we going to know if we found this truth? How are we going to know? What is it going to look like? How are we going to know if we've found God through our seichel properly? How are we going to know? There's no prophet coming along and telling us, yeah, you did the right thing. Well, a big source of that is guidance from sages of Torah. But this is just a little Hanukkah icing. You know, when you look at the Hanukkah lights, and you look at them and you stare at them, and you see something, there's something very, very stunning about those flames. They're so clear. And they're so penetrating. And they're so beautiful. And they're so pleasing. And just looking at the quality of that flame, it's something that just, it's great. It's, there's something that's better. It's better than a latke. It's better than a jelly donut. It's just something striking that you cannot find anywhere else. It's better than a stroke of the ego. There's just something very, very pleasing. Do you relate to what I'm saying? When you look at that flame, there's something deep, something penetrating. That is how we should feel about our Torah. That's how we should feel about our learning. We should have a satisfaction that when we learn, it's so penetrating, it's so striking, it's so satisfying, it's so impressive. We have to learn that way. We have to be able to get strength from that is able to subdue the ego and the body. If we don't get that kind of power from our learning, from our seichel, then it's going to be hard to hold on. We don't have that natural soul strength. We just don't have it. We have to survive through the menorah and through our learning. We have to have clarity. We have to make sure that we understand what's important. And we have to probe and continue to study and to continue to probe until we've got that clarity of those beautiful menorah lights. Please, thank you for listening. And I don't know if I said everything correctly, but please complete it with your discussion. Yes.
First of all, if we are so cut off from Hashem except through Torah, we don't have the prophets, we don't have that, and they had them and lost it all. I mean, that kind of sounds like, okay, they had it and they lost it all. We don't even have it. How do we
even
get it?
All right.
And the second one that kind of fits in with it is, why is it that with the second temple, it didn't have the Kerubim in it, it didn't have the Ark, that's the one you see all over the place, and that's the one everybody says, oh, it was so gorgeous, and it was built by a guy who didn't even like Judaism.
Which one? We see pictures
temple.
Of the second, right?
Yeah, okay. That's the one that's glorified.
Okay. So, I'm so glad you asked those two questions, because it's very, very important to understand this. And I didn't say it, and it needs to be said. This shift from God revealed, prophetic, miraculous, God, to this is where we're on the stage now, and the spotlight is shining on man. That's this new period. The reason for that shift is because we lost it since it wasn't all us, up to us. We lost it because it was all coming from God. And when it all comes from God, It's not really in us as much as when we have to create it through ourselves. This is, I mean, a few years ago, we learned this idea from Rabbi Tatz about how everything goes in two stages. There's the from above. Remember you'll remember maybe from the analogy of teaching the baby how to walk. Remember that one? To teach a baby how to walk, the parents pick up the child or hold the two hands and walk with the child. And the child is going like this. And the child is probably giggling because he's walking. He feels like he's walking. And then the parents let go. And the baby falls flat on his tush. And the baby starts to cry and says, "Why did you drop me? Now I can't walk." And the parents pick the baby up again and walk a few more steps, let go, the baby falls. What's the plan? The plan is we've got to get that baby to walk on his own. Until the baby can walk on its own, it's not really independent. And Rabbi Tatz says this is the pattern throughout history. First, God gives it to us. He gives it to us above our level. We grasp it. We're elated. It may even be too much for us. And then he pulls back and we fall. It happened with the first set of tablets. He brought us to this great height. And then he let us be. And what did we do? We fell flat on our face because it wasn't our level. And then we had to work hard to do it again, to struggle. Finally, we worked ourselves up. Moshe did most of the work. And then we were able to get the second tablets. First tablet, second tablets. First temple, second temple. So what's the answer to your question? We will do it this time. It's going to take longer. It's going to be harder. It's going to be a bigger struggle. But whatever it is that's happening, and God said, "I will make sure that you will not lose the Torah," whatever is happening, it's happening through our efforts. It's happening through our dedication. Once you do it on that level, you don't lose it. And that's why it has to be that way. And that's why that's why the spotlight is on us now. That shift took place from the first temple to the second temple. And these are the tools. God gave us the tools. He says, "Your tool is your menorah." That is, your tool is through your own personal investment in Torah study with the conflict of Greek knowledge, of Greek philosophy. That's going to be your struggle. Your victory is going to be when you persist in the study of Torah. You will eventually acquire it as your very own. And you will become connected to God. And really, from the story of Hanukkah, we learn that it doesn't even have to be a lot. We just have to persist and wanting that connection. We just have to find one jar. God will help us. He's there. He never left us for a minute. He just is holding back. And he shows us through Hanukkah that if we just look for that one jar of oil, he will let it burn further and further. Hanukkah is not just for kids. It is the last Yontif. It's the last, historically, it is the last one, and it is the one that lasts us until the coming of the Mashiach. We are supposed to use Hanukkah as our guide and as our inspiration until the end of days. Yashar Koach.